I went and hung out with kids who, by all other means, are the poorest compared to these people who have everything, and yet they're enjoying their life at such a higher level because of that perspective that they have. And therefore, we have the ability to change our perspective and recognize that everything we want, we already have inside. If we're choosing to want to feel those feelings that we're actually going after externally.
I'm Stephen Pesavento, and welcome to the Name Your Number podcast presented by The Investor Mindset. As someone who comes from a challenging childhood, I've spent my life seeking financial security, personal growth, and ultimately freedom. The freedom to not wake up worried about the next paycheck, but rather with the confidence of knowing that my passive income pays my bills without the need to think about it. When you name your number that you'll earn passively, that creates your ultimate quality of life, then I believe you've achieved real freedom. Welcome to my show. It's time to name your number.
Today, I'm delighted to have Peter Sage in the studio. How you doing today, Peter?
I'm doing absolutely outstanding, sir. Really excited to be here. Should be a great chat.
I'm super excited to talk with you because you've built a number of businesses. You're helping people change the way that they think, all on a path towards living an even better life. So we're going to get into a lot of different things today. But as a starting point, I want to start by looking back at earlier in your life. What events or influences from your childhood shaped who you are today?
Always a good question to ask and reflect back on. And I've done a bit of this, so I have a quite a few insights actually around that. I think, as I'm sure you do, that a lot of our early patterns are formed in childhood. Usually around the areas of what I call survival archetypes. If your parents were chaotic, you needed to create order to survive. Yeah, so you're probably a control freak. And if your parents were control freaks, you're probably a creative side because you need to escape into your imagination. But that also translates a lot around money. If you saw your parents constantly fighting over money, you have an unconscious link, most likely, to linking money to lack of love or unwanted feelings. So that's why most people push it away. And I remember probably some of the pattern that formed for me was I was put into private education. My parents were working class, so they worked their ass off to try to get me what they thought was the best start, which was a good education. And my mom had to work two jobs. My dad was like, he owned his own business, but kind of owned his own job. He had a junkyard. And I remember they came to me, I was 10 years old, and they said, we can't afford to keep you in the private school anymore. You're not going to be able to see your mom if she's got to take another job. Or you go into the state sponsored school, which is like the free education, but the quality drops. And I wanted to see my mom. I didn't want my mom to be working hard. So I went, I decided to, leave the private education and go, with its guaranteed university path and its guaranteed college path and all the stuff that you pay for good quality education for your parents do. And go into the sort of state lottery system of, if I work hard, maybe I'll get a good education but the teachers aren't going to push it.
Yeah.
And I remember vividly, and this is obviously years later, looking back, during the summer recess, over that period between going from the private education to the state education, my parents, specifically my mom, every single day would hammer home, hey, if you don't work hard, you're going to end up living on a park bench. If you don't pass your exams and go to college, you're going to be emptying the trash of the people you were just in private school with. And basically scared the bejesus out of me, thinking that if I didn't work hard, my life was over. And at 10 years old, which is what I was then, I essentially became an overachiever. In that moment, an overachiever, over the summer recess, an overachiever was born. If I didn't work hard, not only would I not get the connection, the love, the approval, the validation that I so much wanted from my parents, as everybody does, but I'd basically spend my life living as a bum on the street. That was my belief. And so everything, tracing back to 10 years old, was a watershed mark. Everything I did from 10 years old onwards, I excelled at, ironically, apart from education. I actually ended up dropping out of school at 16. Yeah, I never did go to college. I never did get a university education. I never suffered the disadvantage of further education, as I sometimes say. But I started my first business at 17. I built multiple international companies. I was a millionaire in my early 20s. I was buying Ferraris for cash when my friends were struggling to cash their unemployment benefits, flying Concorde. And to all intensive purposes, I was, I'd made it. Mm-hmm. What that was masking was a lesson I had to learn very hard. And I'm sure some of your listeners and tribe would appreciate this. There is a huge difference between a life chasing what you think is success, which is really external validation, and a life chasing fulfillment. Because I nearly killed myself driving home one night at 2 o'clock in the morning from the office, as usual, having worked 130-hour week, only to be sat at the side of the road waiting for a tow truck to take the car away, wondering how I just successfully not killed myself or somebody else. Mm-hmm. And asking myself questions like, why am I doing this? Why am I building this business that's trapping me, this monster, or multiple businesses at that point? Because, it's like, I'm sure you've met so many people here, Steve. It's like, oh, I'll make it when I make my first million. Of course, what happens? Mm-hmm. You make your first million and then, oh, well, I still don't feel like I've made it. Oh, I know. I need 2 million in case I lose the first. Right?
Right? I've definitely followed a similar path, and it's incredible that for me in particular, I had grown up without a lot, had some similar beliefs around money, became an overachiever and achieved and was having a lot of fun, making a lot of money. But then tragedy struck and my little sister passed away in a car accident, unexpected, no one's fault. One of those moments that really does change your worldview, changes the perspective, the lens that I was seeing the world through. And for the last four, almost 5 years since then, business hasn't done the same thing it used to. It used to fill me up, and then I realized it's actually empty. If you're not doing it for the right reasons, if there's not that contribution and that impact that's really driving you. And so what I'm curious is if you can explain to the listeners the difference between living in that achiever mode, living in that place of climbing that first mountain versus living in that contributor mode where you're focused on impact, climbing that second mountain.
It's I sum it up in a metaphor I call the curse of the white rabbit. And I'll share it because a lot of entrepreneurs really resonate with this and they finally get to understand something they've never been able to articulate. And that is that if you go to a dog track, you understand the concept. The dogs race around the track, and people bet on who's going to win. They're fast dogs, they're greyhounds. And why do they run? They run because they're chasing a mechanical rabbit. Now, the question is, does the dog ever catch the rabbit? Answer obviously is no.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs chase rabbits. We chase goals. That's what we do. All right. And we've all thought, oh, when I catch that rabbit, then I'll be happy. When I make my first million, when I get the body I want, when I achieve the next milestone, when I get the certificate on the wall, whatever it may be, the next quarterly results, we're always chasing something. Now, back to the dog track. The reason the dogs don't catch the rabbit is not because they don't run fast enough or they don't have the right personal trainer or diet. They don't catch the rabbit because the game is rigged specifically so they can't catch the rabbit. But if you see a dog at the end of the race, here's what they don't do. If I can translate greyhound for a second, let's just say the dog turns to his friend and says, hey, you know something? I ran three races this week. I've won two of them. Still haven't caught that damn rabbit. I quit. No, there's no market for greyhound Prozac.
Yeah.
Instead, you see the dogs at the end of the race. They are ecstatic. Why? They got to run. And that's what they're born to do. Entrepreneurs are born to build businesses. That's what we do. But if you're validating yourself by how many white tails you think you can pin to the wall, you're never going to be fulfilled. Not because you're not a good enough greyhound. Not because you haven't got the right trainer. Not because you're not smart enough. Not because your teacher said you wouldn't amount to anything. Not because you're always living in the shadow of your elder brother. None of that stuff. It's for one simple reason. The game is designed so that you can never catch the rabbit of fulfillment by running on the track of achievement. The two are just not together. Now, what you will get on the track of achievement are four primary human needs. but they're the needs of the personality. You get the need for significance, validation, approval. You get the need for variety. You get the need for certainty. And you also get the need for connection. But what you won't get are the two needs of the spirit, which if you go and look out of your window, you know, this isn't Pete's rules that I made up. You know, this is nature 101. Go have a look. I didn't make them up. All right? And that's growth and contribution. Mm-hmm. When you swap the need for significance or the need for certainty and you replace them as a hierarchy, you can't get rid of them completely. They're human needs. But you replace the hierarchy of what you're most driven by to be growth and contribution. We have to grow so that we can contribute. Your life will immensely shift. Stress will disappear. Yeah, your levels of joy will increase. Your sense of meaning, purpose, reason why you're here, all off the charts. But you can't do that if you're too busy being busy, chasing rabbits around a track, thinking that when you get enough tails pinned to your wall, you'll finally have made it.
Yeah. And yet it's so easy to get caught up in that game, that is rigged so that we can't feel the feeling that we actually believe we're going after. And it's not until you come to that moment where you realize, wow, there's actually something bigger than me. There's actually something that is outside of me that I'm supposed to be here to serve. What was that moment for you when you realized that? Because I find that life is full of these moments where everything's going our way and then suddenly it doesn't. And then some major thing or minor thing happens and it opens up a whole new lens and perspective. What was one of those moments for you, Peter?
I was in Africa. I've done a lot of charity work over the years. I've raised about $1 million for various charities. I'm about to raise another $1 million doing a crazy race at the end of the year. I might touch on that. But yeah. I remember being in Africa and I was working with, I was teaching at an orphanage in a place in rural Kenya called Bungoma. I was over there contributing my time, wanting to help. And I noticed something very unique. All of the kids were so happy. They'd got nothing. We had 1 hour a day where they'd run the diesel generators where we could potentially charge our phones or electronics. Right? Yeah, you were sleeping on you know, mud cots, hoping that the soldier ants wouldn't come and walk off with your meal. Right? Yeah. Rural Africa. And I noticed that these kids were happy. I was living in Dubai at the time, right? Which is the mecca to materialism. Mm-hmm. And it was like I would see kids that were upset flying first class in Emirates because they hadn't got the latest iPad. Yeah. And here's these kids in Bungoma who were so happy. Why? Because they had an extra spoon of rice that day, or it rained that day, or they found this strange stick that they could play some crazy game with. And it made me understand something that finally allowed me to break the curse of the white rabbit. And it was a realization. I already am that which I seek. Mm. Like, whoa. Here's me trying to chase after all the feelings these kids already have. Feelings that I've already felt, which means my brain knows how to feel them. But if you peel back that onion, self-talk is very revealing. Essentially, what people are saying that are playing the achiever game of feel great when, which is essentially what they play, I'll feel great when I make my million or pay off my mortgage or get my Ferrari or whatever it is, find the dream partner, get my body down 30 pounds. I'll feel great when, fill in the blank. These kids play a different game. They play feel great now. And playing feel great when as an achiever, essentially the self-talk is this. When I catch this mythical rabbit that I'm chasing, and if I do happen to catch it, by the way, I'm happy for 30 seconds before the next fluffy tail appears. Yeah, we know that game. I will not give myself permission to feel a feeling that I already know how to feel until the outer world fits the certain pictures that I've decided it needs to fit in order for me to be happy. Mm-hmm. Now, when you analyze that, you're insane.
Yeah.
right? Successful people, fulfilled people play feel great now, not feel great now because I finally made it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen anyone on their deathbed, and I've been around people who have come to terms with their mortality with either hours, days, or minutes to live. Mm-hmm. And here's what they don't say. Stephen, please, go and get me my mahogany framed MBA certificate.
Yeah.
I want to hold it one more time. No. Please go get me my stock certificate for when I made my first million. No. What is the universal message of people that finally come to terms and accept and surrender to their own mortality? Please go get me the people I care about most so I can tell them I love them one more time. And when you start to reprioritize your life, knowing that that is a scenario that is going to happen, everybody has a final scene in their movie. Mm-hmm. You can stop playing the game now in terms of feel great when, and start embracing feel great now.
It's incredible how much pleasure is available when you have the right perspective, right? What you're really saying is, I went and hung out with kids who, by all other means, are the poorest compared to these people who have everything, and yet they're enjoying their life at such a higher level because of that perspective that they have. And therefore, we have the ability to change our perspective and recognize that everything we want, we already have inside. If we're choosing to want to feel those feelings that we're actually going after externally. And so when you make this shift, how do you go about continuing to create a level of motivation and drive to be able to go do the things out in the world? I've seen for myself that where I'm being drawn into is more of the impact, more of the contribution, more of the focus on others. But is that what you found, or what has led to the most drive once you let go of having to please others and instead are doing something meaningful in the world?
Well, you nailed it. It's basically you grow up. Yeah, the first part of our life is all ego-based, and that's required. Nobody's born enlightened. Yeah, Buddha wasn't born enlightened. Yeah, he was born Prince Siddhartha and had to go through his own adolescence, right? And so when we realize there's a big difference between physical maturity and emotional maturity, and the two are not correlated. There's a lot of emotional teenagers running around in some pretty adult bodies. Mm-hmm. So if you stay stuck, focused on yourself, trying to prove to the world that doesn't care that you're good enough, trying to run around looking for somewhere else to replug in your umbilical cord to get approval, validation, or get your ego stroked so that you can finally prove to whoever the hell you think you're trying to prove it to that you've arrived and made it and are worth it. Instead, when you cross that Rubicon, that threshold, where you give up the need to be significant and you start playing the game of raising the significance of others, not as a martyr, not as a doormat, but from somebody who's generally looking to contribute. And you start to grow mature emotionally at that point. So you grow up. Mm-hmm. And so if you're still at a stage where you're trying to validate, if you're seeking external validation, if you are what I call swimming in goop, G-O-O-P, the good opinion of other people, if you don't realize that life is a growth-centric experience, not a comfort-centric experience, and you're trying to fight against the river of life, it's exhausting. You're going to get feedback. If you don't finally become okay not being liked, you're going to stay emotionally immature. If you think that life is about trying to have it cushy, just remember the unchallenged person remains juvenile. So when we realize life is growth-centric, we're here to have this adventure. We're here to go out and swing the bat. Now, you star in the movie of your life. I know that because you're the only one that's in every single scene of your movie. And most people are running around as unpaid film extras in some big budget drama, wondering why their life sucks. Most people are depressed, in my opinion, my experience, not 30 years of working with human behavior and intervention. Number one reason most people are depressed is they're too focused on themselves and why their life doesn't work. You start being able to focus on what I can contribute what can I do to add value rather than poor little me and let go of your victim story? Mm-hmm. You start moving forward with more meaning and purpose and life will get behind you. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not for everyone. And it may be tough love for some people. I'm not here to take away anybody's problems. Some people hang on to them like a trophy. Mm-hmm. Some people are very happy being unhappy. I'm not here to change that. I've got no right. The only right I believe that you and I have, Stephen, is the right to be the example of what's possible and the invitation to others, not the mm-hmm. imposition on others. They will seek it out. That's why people listen to this kind of podcast. Mm-hmm. People that want to hang on to their victim story aren't going to listen in because you'll call them on their shit and so will I, right? In a loving way, because we want mm-hmm. what's more possible for them. But if number one rule of coaching, if you want something for somebody more than they want it for themselves, you're wasting your time. And that's tough if it's your brother. That's tough if it's your mom. That's tough if it's your kid. Right? But we have no right to take away the trials, tribulations, and lessons that made us who we are in our journey away from other people. We can only inspire them by being an example of what's possible.
Yeah. It's ironic because oftentimes, I've experienced that out in the world, whether it's coaching or advising, whether it's working with friends or family, whether it's working with my team, where you see someone's potential and you know what's possible, but you can't necessarily put the key in and drive the ignition for them. They have to find that on their own. They have to want to see that change. And yet, go ahead.
For some people, the reality is it's not this lifetime. Mm. And I'm sure that was me, several lifetimes ago, in the slow learning club.
Yeah.
Needing to hit my head on the pavement on the sidewalk enough times before I finally learned how to tie my shoelaces. Mm-hmm. That's just part of the game. Yeah. There for the grace of God go I. That's why you can't get the spiritual ego involved saying, I'm more evolved than you are. Yeah. That's like a teenager looking at a 6-year-old thinking they're superior.
Yeah.
No, it's like, you're just further along on your own journey of evolution. What's better, an acorn or a sapling? A sapling or an oak tree? Neither. What's better, a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old? Neither. We're just at different parts of our own journey. When you appreciate, respect, and hold a space for people at that level, rather than try to judge or criticize them for not being as enlightened as you think they should, or for being stupid because, why do you keep running the same pattern in the same relationship with different people? Or why do you still go back to alcohol or drugs? Well, there for the grace of God go I. Right? So again, it's about understanding there's many different ages in the playground of life. Some people are going to want to fight. Some people are going to argue over whose marbles are theirs. And as you get older, there's less fights in the playground at university than there is at junior school.
Well, there's something really powerful, I believe, in understanding what beliefs are actually supporting you and what beliefs aren't, right? Mm-hmm. And it's through conversations like this, it's through listening, it's through attending events and being surrounded by others who are thinking differently to you that you can actually have a mirror to see, well, what would that belief be like if I was able to try that on? If I was able to embody that, if I could take on that identity that Peter or Stephen has, or many of the other people who are finding a way to not only have financial success, but also to make an impact and be fulfilled and have the family and connections and friends that are most important to them. But I think that perspective is often hard to have unless you've gone through hard things. And so, so many people are afraid of going through hard things, but I think one of the most interesting things about you, Peter, is that you have so much wisdom. When you speak, there's another level of frequency that I believe you're speaking on. But one of the stories that really inspired me was the moment that you were faced with a difficult challenge and you were sent to prison, mm-hmm. prison for doing absolutely no crime. So would you tell us a little bit about that? And more importantly, what I'm interested in is hearing the story of your perspective and how you went into that space and made something great out of it.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's one of the most incredible adventures I've ever had the privilege of living. And it was a litigation. It was a business argument in court, civil action. And I was up against a multi-billion-dollar company with a $100 million ruthless law firm. And I was on legal aid state appointed attorney. I mean, it's not the best sort of, you know, it's a David and Goliath where David doesn't actually win.
Right? Yeah.
And they threw a contempt of court application at me. I thought it was a chess move. I didn't give it much credibility. I thought they were just trying to pressure me into a settlement. It was financial bullying, and I was holding my ground. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pick your battles. They sold this contempt application to the judge. He gave me 6 months in jail as a civil prisoner. Never been arrested, accused of a crime, no criminal record, not guilty, you know, none of that. But lost everything. This is only just over 5 years ago. And I, as soon as we realized that this was going south, I needed to make a choice very quickly, because you cannot control what you can't control.
Mm.
So many people stress about trying to control things they just can't control. Usually other people. If you've ever made the mistake of expecting you from anyone else, you realize how futile that is.
Yeah.
But I was sent down in handcuffs to what was statistically the most violent prison in the UK, Pentonville, built in the 1800s. Yeah, overcrowded. I mean, just if you've seen Prison Break, it's a similar kind of deal.
Wow.
Yeah, high category, prison. And it was because it was the closest to the court. That's where they put me. Now, I should have been recategorized as a civil prisoner and sort of sent to a holiday camp, within, a day or two. But that process took 4.5 months.
Mm.
So I was in Pentonville for 4.5 months, unsegregated with, all of the criminals. Not even the guards knew, they'd never seen a civil prisoner. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just not geared up for it. So the decision that I made was that I was not going to go in with the identity of a prisoner, because that is victim. And that's only going to lead one way. That's a tunnel with no cheese. Instead, I decided that I was going to go in as a secret agent of change, undercover Jedi. That was my mission. I've been blessed to have helped millions of people over the last quarter century improve their mindset. Or maybe the people I could really help the most never get to see YouTube or come to a seminar or listen to a podcast like this. Why? Because they're in jail. Or they're surrounded by, not a peer group, but a fear group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in, on a mission. Like I'd been hired as undercover by the universe to go and help people. And I took that on. I was excited by the challenge. Mm-hmm. Forget the fact that they just lumped all the legal costs against me. I was $250,000 in debt. I'd lost my business, my wedding, everything had just been taken from me. And I was thrown in at a huge deep end. Not to mention, just before I got there, somebody was murdered. Blood on the floor was a daily occurrence. And this is not, I sit on the couch and watch UFC. I'm not a fighter. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I speak a lot faster than most people hit. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is not my environment, but I never once felt in danger, because I had a deep sense of knowing that I was there to serve. And if I was, the universe would take care of me.
Mm.
Anyway, long story short, I ended up getting a lot of the prisoners off drugs. I was stopping suicides. I redesigned the intake system to reduce violence between the wings. It's now being used in prisons all over the world. I won a national award for the work that I did. And I came out 6 months later, $250,000 in debt, no business, no credit rating, excited about how to dig myself out of that level of hole, because I'd never dug myself out of a hole that deep before.
Mm-hmm.
Also knowing that I just made a huge difference to a lot of people that continues to this day around the world.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, because by taking on this identity and taking on this purpose and trusting and having faith that by being a servant to others, that you are going to be protected, you were able to go in and have a totally different perspective while experiencing this experience. Most people would go in with fear, but you decided to go in with excitement. You decided to go in looking at it as an adventure. You decided to say, hey, well, I'm here for a reason. I might as well be able to give something as a result of the work that I'm doing. How it just seems so far-fetched, because it sounds like you're actually creating a level of certainty for yourself that everything was going to be okay, while most people are looking from certainty from an outside perspective. So how do you solve for that?
It comes back to what you're saying about, you know, what are your primary beliefs? And there are some overarching beliefs that really form a concrete foundation on which to build. Einstein said that the most powerful question a person can ask or answer in their lifetime is they live in a friendly or a hostile universe. Mm. And what he was alluding to there, pretty smart guy, never met him, but you know, apparently knew what he was talking about. But what he was alluding to there was that if you have the belief that the universe is hostile, you're going to live life through a fear-based lens. Everything with teeth can eat you. Yeah, you're always looking for the hole in the donut. You're going to train your reticular activating system to be, you know, overactive on looking for threats. If you believe instead that you live in a friendly universe, but life doesn't happen to you, it happens for you, mm-hmm. happens through you, that you're the star of your movie, then you're going to have a very different experience. Hence, one of the short stories I wrote in there that helped so many prisoners was called Mud or Stars, taken after the old adage, two men sat behind prison bars, one saw mud, the other saw stars. The condition is identical, but how you choose to perceive it changes everything. And for me, what Einstein was really saying was this: you don't live in a friendly universe. You don't live in a hostile universe. You live in a self-reflective universe. How you choose, underline, choose to see the world will become your reality. You believe in magic, you're going to live a magical life. Now, I also understand that theory doesn't cover the price of admission to the higher levels of greatness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or as Bruce Lee put it, you can't learn to swim on dry land. Mm-hmm. I've been teaching a good game for 25 years at that point. That doesn't mean anything if I can't go and walk and demonstrate my own, you know, stuff in an environment that's real. No second takes, no podcasts, no like behind the scenes, no blah, blah, staged questions, none of that crap. No. Throw the guy in the most violent jail in England and see how he can manage himself, let alone others. Mm-hmm. Right? And yeah, there were times I was nervous. There were times I was depressed. There was times I cried. But they were where I visited, not where I lived. Mm. Most people, yeah, live in depression and visit joy occasionally. What muscle do you want to build? Because it is a muscle. Right? If you live in the gym, you can visit McDonald's once in a while. It's not going to do a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you live in McDonald's, I got news for you. You can visit the gym once in a while. It ain't going to do a lot.
Yeah.
And you're stuck with whatever those two choices will give you. Either health, vitality, vibrancy, and a body to be proud of that's going to carry you pain-free for a long part of life. Or an early grave with, yeah, diabetes, obesity, and metabolic dysfunction. Yeah, pick one. No one does mm-hmm. that to you. You choose. So I chose to live in a friendly universe. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was my core belief. From there, you can build. Mm-hmm. From there, you can say, listen, I know this must be happening for a reason. I don't know what the reason is, but it must serve me at some point. I don't get to look around corners. Every river bends, especially the river of life. There are no straight lines in nature. Mm-hmm. So I need to be able to trust the wisdom of the current. Mm-hmm. Because if you know you're in the right river, you don't care if it bends left or right. But if you say my goal is north and you're heading north and the river then bends east, you're going to freak out and start to try to dig a channel yeah, north into the bank, which is exhausting. Mm-hmm. But if you learn how to sail with the bends, mm-hmm. instead of fighting the current, you use your energy to position yourself better in the current. Roll with the punches, play the hand you're dealt. There's many different ways you can look into modern vocabulary to describe it, but become a better sailor. And if you do that, the river almost always will catapult you back round to where you want to go faster and at a different level. Mm-hmm. That's,
yeah, because
beliefs are everything.
There's such power in that perspective, because that perspective has faith. It has trust that things are working out. It has a set of beliefs that are empowering you to be able to stay in that space of doing what you're there to do and being able to take something that is a terrible situation and make it into a great gift. And it truly just comes down to that perspective. And the reason that this is so important, if it's not already clear, is that in business, in your personal life, in investing, there's always going to be challenges. but those challenges can be fuel to propel you forward, lessons that you can learn from and grow, or they can be anchors that hold you back and don't allow you to truly live your best life.
100%. And we know in if you go to nature, yeah, in neuromuscular biology, if you take a mammal, of which last time I checked, we were part of that species, right?
Yeah.
If a mammal sees an external situation and perceives that as a threat, it will lose up to 30% of its muscle strength.
Wow.
If that same mammal perceives that same scenario as a challenge, it will gain up to 30% of its muscle strength. That is your biochemistry, either playing dead and riding you off and going into fight or flight, or rising to the challenge. And when you realize we didn't come here to avoid the challenges, we came to take them on. Everything about our biology is geared towards that, which is why, you know, contrast frames are a very powerful tool for people to use. I'll give you an example. You can always contrast things one of two ways. Yeah, our brains are contrast machines. We make meaning out of contrast. That's how we're wired neurologically. Yeah, how do you read? Well, your brain contrasts two different colors in symbolism that then internalizes that as a language, right? Off the page, black and white. If you're looking at a parking lot, you contrast empty spaces with full spaces, or you contrast a parking lot full of white cars and there's one red one, you're going to notice it, but the red one first, right? By contrast. Mm-hmm. So we're contrast machines. So let's say you go to work one morning and your boss calls you in. You've been there 3 months on trial. And the boss calls you in and says, "Hey, Stephen, really been impressed with your work for the last 3 months. You know, you're a team player. Everybody loves you. And we decide that we're going to give you a permanent contract and we're going to give you a 10% pay rise as well." Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, how good you feel?
You feel amazing.
Pretty good day.
Feel like an 8.
Yeah. So you're buzzing around and yeah, you go to the staff canteen at lunchtime and yeah, you're standing next to Cheryl and Cheryl's making her coffee and she's all buzzing too. Say, "Hey, Cheryl, how's it going?" She said, "Oh, great day. The boss called me into his office. You know, I've been here for 3 months and he gave me a permanent contract." And she does the same kind of job as you and you're buzzing as well. You're happy for it. She says, "Yeah, and gave me a 20% pay rise."
Yeah.
You're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 hang on. She got 20%. Now you don't feel so good."
Yeah.
"You had nothing before and now you only have 10%. See, when you contrast the 10 with zero, you feel good. You contrast it with 20, you now feel like crap. Same 10%. I was able to shift some of the mindsets of the prisoners just by using the contrast frame of how much they could have got as a sentence versus what they actually got. Yeah, a guy gets 10 months and the maximum sentence is 2 years. Imagine you had got 2 years, and then just as you're about to be sent away, the judge says, "You know something, I've just reconsidered. I'm going to reduce it to 10 months. How do you feel?"
Incredible.
You would skip out of that courtroom rather than walk with your head in your hands. There's always a way to contrast. So the skill, or one of the best skills, if you really want a decent investor mindset, if you want a human mindset that's going to give you self-mastery, which beats knowledge mastery all day long, learn how to continually contrast in a way that makes you feel good, not bad, about what you have. Just like the kids in Africa. "Wow, I got an extra spoon of rice," versus, "Oh, crap, I didn't get the extra iPad." Right. You do that, there is always, always, always something to be grateful for.
Yeah.
You lose your arm, it could have been both. There's always a way to look.
Yeah, it is a skill that is not well taught today. It's a skill that I don't believe very many people have built into a strong skill and a habit, but yet it's extremely powerful because from a energy, a happiness, a motivation perspective, if you do that contrast, you're going to put yourself in such a better state and a place to be able to show up and do the things that you really need to do to get the life that you actually want. So I've got two more questions, but before I get there, let's pause and share with the audience, where can they follow you or where can they learn more about what you do, Peter?
Oh, thank you. Well, my website is petersage.com. I've just launched a major campaign for a crazy race I'm doing at the end of the year, which is that the tagline is cheerfulness in the face of adversity. We're raising $1 million for mental health. And I'm going to be rowing 3,000 miles across the Atlantic.
Wow.
In the world's toughest row. Now, sleeping for 2 hours and rowing for 2 hours, 24/7 for 2 months. And that's probably the most insane physical, event on earth right now. But yeah, I'm in this year's world's toughest row event, and I'm in the pairs category. So there's, myself and my childhood friend. And we're going to, so yeah, teamcheerfulness.com. If you want to come and support us with mental health, we're also giving three times whatever people donate in terms of mental health programs and self-mastery programs to try to spread the message and hopefully bring one smile at a time as we cross the Atlantic, as you follow us on our crazy race.
It sounds amazing. Everyone should definitely check that out. So the last two questions I have, and I wish we had hours, but we'll have to wrap up on this for today.
Sure.
The power of acceptance, the power of that perspective, the power of being able to let go of the fact that you don't have control and step into a state of accepting the way that things are so that you can be more proactive and productive. How do you do this, and why is it so important to be able to do this quickly?
Well, there's a very powerful caveat here to look at. If you surrender and give up the need for control from a victim level, you will go into apathy and you will go into further levels of victim. If you give up the need for control because you trust in a friendly universe that it's got your back, that it'll be this or something better, that the universe is taking care of you and everything's going according to plan, even if it's not a plan your left brain can wrap its head around right now, that way you rise in levels of consciousness to have a better life. So there, it's not just a case of, oh, well, okay, screw it. Yeah, I'll just surrender then. No. Yeah, when Jesus said, turn the other cheek, if you're in victim mode, that's like getting sand kicked in your face. Right? If you're in, that's surrender to being oppressed. If you're an achiever, you're like hell will I turn the other cheek? I'm going to punch the guy back. All right? That's just struggle and effort to try to carve your way into a hostile world. If you're at a higher level of conscience, you see the wisdom behind that. It's like, no, I'm going to slap you, turn the other cheek. You can't be pushed, controlled, manipulated. Or as Gandhi said, no one can take away your power. You can only give it away. So yeah, you need to have that level of trust or faith in something bigger than you, even if you call it your higher self, before you do that. Otherwise, you're going to crumble.
Yeah, I really hear that as a core belief, and I see it and I really believe in it, because for so long I was pushing. I was in effort mode. I was making things happen. And then through my own spiritual journey and some of the things that I mentioned earlier, I realized that, wow, if you do surrender, but from a place of having trust and faith that things will work out, not only do things start flowing to you, but the journey is way more fun. It's way more enjoyable. And so I think all of this stuff that we've talked about, Peter, is so critical, because from a business standpoint, this will totally change the way that you bring clients into your world, that you are able to create the income to make the impact that you want to do. And from a personal level, it will lead to having a much more enjoyable process and having people who want to be around you. And so for those listeners who are hearing this message, and they're saying to themselves, they're nodding along saying, I know I need to do this. I know I need to change my beliefs, but I just can't get myself to make that first move. What do you recommend? Where's the first place to start so they can begin to adopt a different way of thinking and step into this?
Ask yourself why you believe that. Most people are walking around with beliefs that they've had since they were teenagers, and they've never re-questioned it. They've just adopted it as their model of the world. They've never done an audit on their own limitations. Yeah, what do you believe about money? Well, why do you believe that? Is that still true for you? Was it true to begin with, or did it just serve you at that time for a period? So you wouldn't walk around with clothes that you wore when you were 10 years old. You'd look pretty silly. But most people are walking around with beliefs they've had since they were 10 years old, or teenagers. Most people are sleeping awake. They're hypnotized into thinking, materialism is the way to validate yourself. So I've got to buy all this crap so that I can look this way, smell this way, appear this way. So hopefully to impress people that don't really care. But I won't figure that out until I get there on top of Success Mountain and then want to jump off because I don't like the view. So start small, question a belief, and then play with it. Live as if it was true, the new belief, for 7 days, see what shows up. You don't like it, don't adopt it. You can always go back to crappy victimhood. It'll be waiting for you if you wish. But most people will start, if you give faith in the universe a chance, if you give, you understand there is a primary law, and I'll leave people with this one thing they want to tattoo on the inside of their eyelids. Outer world follows inner world. Your financial bank account follows your emotional bank account. You want your financial bank account to go up and you're feeling like crap? Good luck. You may get a temporary spike. It'll come back down. Because the number one rule of personal growth, people will never rise above the opinion of themselves. So focus on the gift that you are, that you have. You wouldn't be here if you didn't have some level of mission to go give your heart and soul to help humanity raise its level of consciousness to the next level. And most people listening to this already understand.
Yeah. Well, Peter, such sage wisdom. It's amazing having a fellow traveler on the journey who has been down the path and faced challenges and is an incredible example of what's possible when you do make those beliefs and changes. So thank you so much for joining us, and thank you all for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Today's episode is sponsored by Von Finch Capital. If you're interested in investing alongside me in the same type of real estate opportunities that I personally invest in, then head over to Von Finch Capital and join their private investor network. You can do so at vonfinch.com/invest. Join me on that next deal, and I look forward to seeing you on the inside. Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. Head over to theinvestormindset.com to join the Insider Club, where we share tools and strategies from the top investors and entrepreneurs on how to take it to the next level.
Hey, this is Steven again. Just one more thing before you take off, and that is the Insider's Newsletter. Would you enjoy getting a single email every week with some of my favorite things, including tips and strategies on how to get the most out of your life and your investments? Basically, what it is some of the coolest things that I've discovered or am pondering when it comes to life, investing, and business delivered in a short email every week to your inbox. Easy to sign up for, easy to cancel. If you'd like to try it out, type into your browser, investormindset.com/newsletter to get started, and you'll get the very next one.